I'm thinking too about an ethics of care. You know, when folks are on social media, and I'm always on Twitter, I'm following the news. I have friends who are writers on online media outlets, and some of the folks that who do write, when they're writing about stories about Ferguson or Baltimore, they will, for example, here's one example of sort of what I would understand as an ethics of care. They would ask a person if they could use his tweets in the story, even if it's public.
I have seen a few times, just encountering myself, the awkward scenes where someone writes, "My aunt just died in a shooting." And you'll see a reporter tweet back saying, "Can I contact you to ask about this?" Like, no, that's not okay. There should be a clear line against that kind of invasive contact for a victim of a crime as it's happening.
Doesn't that go back to one of the earlier comments about what makes a journalist? I mean, we can talk in this room as people that, you know, I mean... you're even identifying yourself. You're like, I'm not a journalist. I'm a lawyer that happens to be, you know, doing a blog that or doing a podcast people are following on it. But, you know, it's not a simple answer to say that everyone's a journalist or no one's a journalist or someone's an activist. And I understand that activist is being thrown at certain people that I would say are journalists to often excuse people cracking down on them or excluding them from interviews and things like that. But on the flip side, I also think that there are activists out there that are often being given some of the same latitude and leeway that journalists are, particularly in war zones. And this is from a global perspective. I did a panel about a year ago now, actually, about that was talking about this and saying, you know, well, isn't it bad that journalists are being killed in war zones? And I said, well, obviously, I mean, nobody wants that to be happening. No one wants anyone dying in there. But I said, where is the line at times between an activist on the ground and a journalist? It can no longer be, well, they weren't carrying a gun, so they must have been a journalist. That's not really the appropriate response anymore. There's a lot of shades of gray in there. So on the domestic side, if we're going to talk about an ethics, if we're going to talk about care, if we're going to talk about standards, then we have to talk about what a definition of a journalist is. And as much as I was saying that social media has become basically media as a whole, it is media as a whole done by a whole bunch of people that on Monday they're a journalist, on Tuesday they're a private citizen, and on Wednesday they're an activist, and on Thursday they're a journalist. I don't know how to parse that. I want to give everybody the full protection. I think that anybody is telling me the truth, I want to give the protection to and listen to. But, you know, if they're telling me the truth on Monday and on Tuesday they're saying, well, don't engage with me because I'm a private citizen, I don't – okay. Then I don't know what to do. Now, I'm not bullying people. I just want to make it clear. But like, you know, if they're coming out and they're saying these things online and then somebody's contacting them for a comment or what they're seeing and then they're saying, oh, no, don't do that. It's a little bit hard. And that line gets grayer and grayer every day.
I do have that happening often when I'm out in the field somewhere. You know, we were marching from New York City to D.C. And we were staying in Baltimore the day that Freddie Gray was announced. Pronounced dead, and we had the Baltimore Sun following us because we had rerouted to the precinct, and because the Baltimore Sun was following us, they were able to capture the story of Freddie Gray that then shed light to what was happening, and that went national. But, you know, there's sometimes when you're just in a space and you're taking a photo and you just tweet it and all of a sudden you have somebody reaching out to you saying if they could share it. And oftentimes because we are in those spaces, I don't have a problem with it. Very similar to what you're saying. You know, I'm an activist 24 hours and there's times where I stop and actually want to capture where I am. But I think there's somebody else that needs to tell the story beyond myself.
So that begs the question, though, should and I'm thinking I'm in my mind, I'm thinking of the young activists on campus who they are in these public spaces, they are protesting, but at the same time, do they deserve to have safe spaces in public space? I know, I'm quoting Gloria Anzaldúa here, there are no safe spaces, but should we offer these safe spaces for young people coming through and doing this kind of work, or is it an issue, is it a problem? I'm still trying to...
I kind of feel it depends. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that for us in Baltimore, the media came out and they began to agitate the community and us that were marching. And at a certain point, we had to withdraw from the scene, right? We had to protect those that were marching with us. There were 16-year-olds with us. There was about 100 of us. But yeah, I think it kind of depends on the situation. If people want privacy, I mean, I'm not speaking on behalf of every activist, but when I am able to capture something and I'm being contacted, it's my response. You know, it's the way in which I'm going to respond, whether yes or no. And I think there should be, I don't know if it's privacy, but I think it's more respect in those circumstances. But, you know, and it's all circumstantial. Yeah. I can't say, you know, what happened in we were also passing through Maryland and we were getting called out by the KKK there, you know, and we wish media was there. Right. So it kind of it depends on where you are and what space you're in. And certainly we don't want to go into communities and activate violence. So I think it is circumstantial. Mm-hmm.
Jackie, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, too, given the work that you do with your organization.
Yeah, I mean, the situation in Missouri, I think, is very much a gray area for me. I definitely support the notion of a safe space, and I think that people should have that. But I think it's hard when it isn't a public space, and there is the journalistic right, you know, the First Amendment right to report on that stuff. You know, the situation like in Missouri with the media and kind of all the media coverage can distract from the real issue, which my understanding is that was one of the things that activists were trying to prevent. And I think that sometimes we let these conversations about what we're seeing in the media distract from what's actually happening or what the issue at hand is. And I think it's, again, an issue with video and photos and this police harassment, and they're now we hear people saying, oh, well, if there's no video, it didn't happen, or, you know, the Walter Scott case, like, what if there was no video? That might have never gone noticed. And so I think, while I think it's really important that those videos are coming out and being utilized in good and effective ways, I think that this reliance on media and social media and citizen reporting can make us, can be a little bit of a distraction from the fact that sometimes that media isn't even used in the justice system. And the justice system here in this country is very broken. And so while we're talking about, oh, well, they need to enter the video into the court case, we're not talking about, well, that might not ever happen because, or we'll never find out because the court case is sealed off and we'll never even know, like in the Eric Garner case, when there was a video that was very clear what happened and still we had a non-indictment, so.
Yeah.
I got to ask some questions in response to all of these. Protesters having safe space and being able to express their views is obviously something that, like, conceptually everyone would get behind. I like the quote that you started with, there is no such thing as a safe space. I also think that protesters are getting better at controlling the narrative, and that's good from a communications point of view, but not necessarily more genuine than it used to be. Protest leaders now understand that video of even one of their members throwing a rock through a window steals the narrative and steals the thunder. It turns the Seattle WTO protests of the late 90s from a protest about legitimate concerns about trade into rowdy 20-year-olds taking over Starbucks. And that's what we remember. We remember the riot that broke out, not the protest. And no one really cares about the WTO in the same way anymore because we've kind of gotten over it or whatever. But if a protester can say, back up, please give me space, can a police officer say the same? If a protester can say, back up, give me space, can the white woman who was caught on video saying incredibly awful, awful things to the protesters, can she also say, back up, do not use that video? That video, I believe, got that woman fired, or at least it was under consideration.
Yeah, she's gone.
So, I mean, from a personal perspective, what she said was horrible. And I don't like to think of a person that's leading young minds having that kind of point of view. But if a protester can say that in Missouri, why can't she? And if we start on one, why not the other? And it can't always default to, well, we pick the people we think need to be protected in this situation, but the other people don't need to be protected. I think that you had a great point, Carmen. Like, you know, we wanted our space in this situation because we didn't want to activate violence. I absolutely agree with that. And I think it's a great thing about how you want to pull back and you want to keep groups somewhat separate in those situations. You want to put some buffer zones in there. You want to create a safe space between two opposing groups that may antagonize each other because tensions are running high. But you also wanted, you know, the coverage of like the KKK calling you out. And I would say I would also want that coverage. You know, I'd want people to see that this antagonism is going on. And in that sense, frankly, I probably want to see that the antagonism is going on from a professor or a member of staff at a university yelling at students that have a different point of view. But I think it's got to be one way or the other. Either that we can be there with cameras. And actually, I don't think the woman that I'm thinking of was caught by a journalist. I think she was caught by a cell phone.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, that was even beyond the spectrum of, well, can journalists be there, but who has the right to share video of another person's point of view? And so I think it's very difficult. It's always shades of gray, but it's specifically very difficult in this day and age when you can say on one side, we should be able to control the narrative and step back. And on the other, we can say, well, if it serves my purposes, man, it's truth. It's truth to power. It's truth to bigotry. And I'd rather err on the side of truth to bigotry if I have to err on one of the sides.
Susan.
Oh, I fully agree. You can't have a sometimes a safe space when it's not real. It should be always open. But at the same time, from an ethics perspective, you can't have the media there antagonizing everyone else. And they have an interest in doing so. They get better coverage if they cause tensions, if they cause people to get pissed off and start making scenes. So to the extent that's happening, there should be stronger ethical restrictions on that. But in terms of just filming and not turning part of the story themselves, I don't think you can restrict that. Yeah.